Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
I'm going to go right to the big news.
Sears Holding Corp would not discuss how many jobs would be cut.
With regards to abortion, I changed my mind.
You're seeing a transformation.
It'll take this junk off the air.
It's great. Love basketball. Great to see the players back again.
All right, that last story was about whether or not Cheetah from Tarzan died or whether that was an imposter. That's the one story we're not talking about today because that's one that only geneticists will be able to figure out. But everything else is on the table with our panel of wits. We've got Farai Chidea, journalist and blogger at Farai.com. Ron Christie, Republican political strategist and former special assistant to President George W. Bush. He's a contributor to WNYC's politics blog, It's a Free Country. And with us today, joining the crew, is Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, Takeaway sports contributor. Good morning to all three of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
From the last Takeaway show of 2011. So it's only fitting that we begin here with kind of a look at the economy a little bit as we close out the books on 2011. And one of the things that we're recently getting are these holiday sales numbers. They're expected to have gone up almost 4% to a record number of almost $470 billion. Online sales were incredible this year, up 15% compared to a year earlier. You guys are nodding. You know all this. Can we join these together with these polls that show Americans are feeling a little better? Do they go in hand, Ron?
I think they do. I think it shows that Americans are starting to have a little bit more confidence about the economy. They're starting to have a little bit more confidence about their ability to spend money, to put a little money away in the bank. But they also feel comfortable shopping at home. The thing that I found most really telling about that statistic is that years ago, there were so many Americans who said, I don't want to put my credit card information on the internet. I don't want to share my information. And now folks are saying, no, I want to shop from home and I feel more comfortable getting that box from Amazon as opposed to going out to the mall.
And trying to find a parking space. I mean, it does feel Farai.
Or getting stabbed, as happened with the Air Jordan.
Or pepper sprayed.
Yeah, peppers. There was a pepper spray Walmart situation.
Trampling.
And then there were people who were stabbed and shot at. During the Air Jordan frenzy. So I guess people figure, why not stay home?
All right.
I don't know what that says about where we are as a people when people are fighting for sneakers and what our psyche is as a community, as a culture.
Absolutely. Well, it says a lot.
Well, it says I'd rather order from Amazon is what that
That's
says.
Exactly what that says.
But if we're going to be talking about bad behavior, we might as well move straight into Iowa, right? Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things it doesn't surprise me that the polls are kind of going back and forth and back and forth between these candidates because that's so far been the storyline, right? Mm-hmm. Hasn't that been the race so far, you think?
Yeah, you know, people changing candidates faster than they change underwear.
Right.
That's the line for the morning.
and people can change their underwear pretty quickly. But you know what kind of surprises me here is that you would think, according to these numbers in Iowa, Ron Paul would finally be getting respect.
Well, I think Ron Paul is a flawed candidate in so many different ways. I mean, he might be a conservative and he might say the right things as it relates to domestic policy. But the fact that so many people dislike Ron Paul for the fact that he said the United States was to blame for 9/11 and that he wants to be an isolationist as it relates to foreign policy, that he might look good on paper, but the more that you unravel and you look at his newsletters of the Ron Paul report that he edited that has such clearly racist content in it, that this guy is not ready for prime time, not ready to be the president, shouldn't frankly be running.
I'm more concerned right now is whether Iowa's going to the Hawkeyes are going to beat Oklahoma in the Insight Bowl, which is on the 30th. So I think that a lot of Iowans are torn right now. Do they want to vote for one of these wonderfully flawed candidates, or do they want to go support their team?
I really feel like with Ron Paul, he is someone who is very clear and simple about his message, even when he's dead wrong. He's right on some things. He's wrong on other things. He's not taking responsibility for the racist and anti-Semitic content of these newsletters. But, you know, some of the things that he says about U.S. foreign policy, I mean, I think a lot of people would like less engagement, but he really talks about just pulling the ripcord on U.S. foreign policy. But people like him because he's simple and he's clear. And what's interesting is that you're getting sort of a Naderite type progressive who is for whom Obama is not left enough, who also is looking at Paul. That's fascinating to me, particularly given Newslettergate, that you have some progressives who are looking at Ron Paul as a candidate.
But this interesting. Let me read you this quote from Gingrich, because it sounds like he's threatening the people of Iowa. He says, it would be very good for the future of the Iowa caucuses for somebody other than Ron Paul to win. Doesn't that sound like he's saying,
I hate to say it, but I'd kind of like to threaten the future of the Iowa caucuses. I mean, the reality is this is not a lifetime precedent. This is not constitutional law. Iowa's been going first since 1972. And between Iowa and New Hampshire, you are seeing nothing resembling a swing state, nothing resembling the demographics of America. I don't understand why we are being, as a country, sort of held hostage to this nominating process that does not reflect America as a whole. And that says nothing bad about Iowa. Iowa is a great state, but this is a republic of 50 states, and Iowa and New Hampshire, neither of them represent kind of the cross-section of American life.
I think Farai's right. I think if you look at the Iowa caucus, if you look, the last president who's won the Iowa caucus was George W. Bush since 1972. So it's not clearly reflective of, oh, I have to win Iowa and therefore I'm going to head to the White House. No, it's been a very rare indicator of who's actually going to receive the ultimate nomination. My thing about what the former Speaker of the House had to say is, I have to say, even though he's not a viable candidate, I think what he had to say about Ron Paul is right. I mean, I just don't think that the conservatives that you have in the field who are in Iowa, those who are surging, those who might be sort of fading a little bit, are reflective of where the Republican Party is right now and who is ultimately going to be the nominee, because the odds are it's going to be the former governor from Massachusetts, Mitt Romney.
And you mean to say he was the first GOP candidate to win?
Barack Obama did win.
Yeah, Barack Obama. And we should remember, Michelle Bachmann took the Iowa straw poll, which, and now she's not coming close in the polls.
Now she's turned into a woman of straw.
I think the one thing that could mess up this whole thing is if Tim Tebow came in and decided he was going to support any one of these candidates. That would really just tip it over completely.
Actually, you're probably correct.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably correct. Well, let's move on to another story, which is you know, there was a lot of controversy over the new law in Arizona that dealt with ethnic studies programs. There is a very popular Mexican-American studies program in Arizona that they vowed they would keep. And now an administrative law judge ruled on Tuesday that perhaps this is the end for this program, that it violates this new state law. Farai, what are we to think of this?
Well, one of the classic debates in education has been, how do you make education more inclusive? I mean, there were many years in which basically Black history, Chinese history, Mexican history, all of these early immigrant groups or groups who were part of American society were completely eliminated. You know, it was like one line, Lincoln freed the slaves. Let's move on, you know. And so I think that the problem is not ethnic studies per se. The problem is, how inclusive are America's textbooks? If we can fix that problem, then the rest of it is kind of
need the ethnic
beside the wayside.
Yeah. Ibrahim, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeesh. That's a huge topic. I think it's funny, though, that you can look at the state in particular, in Arizona. They have this tons of events that happen in that state. So you could risk, you know, there's all this outside energy that comes in consistently for big sports games and events. And you could risk alienating some people that come there just to enjoy themselves and start to think, wait a second, am I even wanted here?
Well, we have just about a minute left here, and we're going to move on to our guilty pleasure, which, if you know, most people don't know this company, but a company has sued an ex-employee who took their Twitter followers. The company says those were our Twitter followers. You got them while you were here at our company. He says they're mine. And it comes down to, what exactly is a Twitter follower worth? So I'm going to ask you guys, I'll put a price tag on it. How much is one Twitter follower worth? Farai, how much?
I have seen reports that Twitter itself, which is moving more aggressively into advertising, can value certain followers at up to $4. You know,
wow.
But that doesn't mean that any follower is worth that. I mean, I think that it's always a question of strategic advertising. That's why you see
depends
Movado watch ads in
follower.
Vanity Fair, and you don't see them in Vibe.
Ron, how much?
I think a fair amount. I think Farai's right. I think not only advertising, but I think social media is really the new way that folks are starting to communicate. And I'm the new guy to this. I've only been at Twitter for about 2 months.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. I'm already about 600 followers, Ron_Christie, for those of you listening. And it's just, it's a neat medium for people to communicate. And I think that the value is only
going
to go
all
up.
All right. So you're going with the $4. And Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, how much do you think a Twitter follower is worth?
It depends on how you interact with them. I think Casey Kane, who's the NASCAR driver who just tweeted his disgust at a woman breastfeeding in public, there's one follower that he called a dumb bee. So that Twitter follower is probably worth a lot more money because he's about to lose one.
Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, Takeaway Sports contributor, Farai Today, journalist and blogger at Farai.com, and Ron Christie, Republican political strategist, political contributor for The Takeaway, and our co-producer, WNYC's politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Thanks to all of you. Happy New Year. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm Todd Zwillick. All of my Twitter followers are priceless. This is The Takeaway.
Nice plug.